I'm Jonathan Green. This is Lost and Found, and this week, Glasgow. As we head into the post-Brexit world and the possibility, who knows, of a hard Scottish border, we'll take this last opportunity to travel to Glasgow.
They'll be taking their scones and going, I think.
Juliana, welcome. My guide, as ever, in our peregrinations, Juliana Engberg, curator, author of En Route. Glasgow. This is a...
I love Glasgow, Jonathan.
Well, see, it has a tough reputation.
Oh, it's tough. I mean, yeah, like, wouldn't want to, you know, shirt front somebody here in Glasgow because you might lose all your buttons. No, look, Glasgow is one of those places that you grow to love. It's a place I've been to so many times. Mm. It has an extraordinary art production. Famously, so many of the Turner Prize winners come from the Glasgow Art School. It's called the Glasgow Miracle. And it really is a city that, on the face of it, looks a bit gloomy. But it's a great place. It's got hidden delights. It's got a beautiful culture that's very intact. It's true, too. The first time I went there, I thought, it's very grubby. But then they got the European Capital of Culture grant and they cleaned themselves up. So much so that then Apple decided to have its headquarters in Glasgow.
Oh,
much
you know
to the,
you've made it oh, when?
Do you think that Edinburgh lost its pack that way? I mean, they were furious. But it does indicate the extent to which Glasgow is one of those, you know, creative capitals, definitely. So it's definitely worth a bit of a look. Anyway.
Cup of tea?
Oh, I think we should. Mm. I think I'll take us to the Willow Tea Rooms. Now, most people would... It is très modern. Most people, if you ask them about Charles Rennie Mackintosh, would probably say, go to the Glasgow Art School, because that is an excellent example of his architecture, mm-hmm. sadly burnt recently and not so far away. However, I tend to think that the Willow Tea Rooms are a perfect example of what he did. And in some ways, this little shop is his Gesamtkunstwerk. It provides, I think, the exact opportunity to recognise his thesis of simplicity, of a kind of... austere nouveau approach, and very much indicates the way in which he is looking to the Japanese.
Yes.
You remember now that the Japanese have just opened up, you know, they've stopped being so protectionist. They're now trading a lot with Europe, and a lot of their aesthetic lessons are filtering across at the turn of last century. And Charles Rennie Mackintosh and his wife, little mentioned Margaret MacDonald, were particularly keen to pursue these rather strict rectilinear patterns. This lacquer work, which is quite famously known and associated with Rennie Mackintosh, these upright chairs, you know, highly lacquered and polished, and these windows that are strict in their structure. In Glasgow, they call this little place the Wee Windies because they've got little Wee Windies, but it's... So if you say, I'm going to the Willow, like, oh, the Wee Windies. But it is a fantastic place to sit in. Mm. And you do get to have a wonderful sense of Rennie Mackintosh's approach to his interior, which he did with his wife, the decorative flourishes that he put there. So whilst it's austere, it is also rather delectable. There are beautiful little stained glass flourishes of flowers and motifs that give it a sort of a divine character. It is a little bit monastic, and of course it was made for his patron, Miss Cranston, who was a teetotaler, a temperance believer, who thought that all ills could be cured by a good cup of tea, and she
was
probably
taken
right.
In a slightly stern setting.
Now, the other thing that you can get at the Wee Windies, you know, if you should find yourself there and it's a rather chilly day, is they do a marvellous soup, and it's the vegetable soup is something else because it has a lot of carrot juice in it, and that's a particularly Scottish thing, this carrot juice, which sweetens the broth. Mm. Oh, it's absolutely delicious.
The late Anthony Bourdain, he described Glasgow as the antidote to the rest of the world. It's an unapologetically frank city. It's also a city of great cultural richness, a city that has produced extraordinary literary, artistic, and intellectual talent. Professor Robert Crawford, School of English at St Andrews University, says the history of the city can be understood through four great cultural works. Two books, a a chair and a library, beginning with Adam Smith.
Adam Smith's Inquiry into the Wealth of Nations, which is probably the best known economics book ever published, has on its original title page the billing of Smith as formerly Professor of Moral Philosophy in the University of Glasgow. Smith taught in Glasgow for about a decade and a half. He'd been a student at Glasgow University. He taught moral philosophy there. He also lectured on what we would now call English literature. But he's best known today as an economist. And when Smith was in Glasgow, he belonged to a political economy club. He met lots of the Glasgow merchants. He discussed trade and commerce and kinds of exchange, literary exchange, philosophical exchange, but also financial exchange. And he understood how trade worked in Glasgow. Trade in 18th century Glasgow brought lots of money into the city, not least money from commodities that were being imported from the Caribbean and from mainland North America, like sugar and tobacco. This meant that Glasgow grew very rich, but it also meant that some of the money coming into Glasgow was money involved with the slave trade. Adam Smith was against slavery, but he understood the complexities of commerce. So if you were to pick one book linked to Glasgow that had become world famous, I'd suggest it's Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations. And it's a book that signals that Glasgow in the 18th century was both a commercial and an intellectual centre.
Colin Bissett.
Glasgow's reputation as a powerhouse of the British Empire is clear in the grandeur of its buildings, like the People's Palace, a red stone building that sits alongside the source of Glasgow's wealth, the River Clyde. It opened in 1898 as a kind of celebration of the city, with an art gallery and social spaces set in parkland that provided respite from the smoggy surrounds. Beyond it, though, you'll see a building of the same period that is much grander and perfectly expresses the city at the peak of its power. Templeton's Carpet Factory was based on the Doge's Palace in Venice, and it's as though the architect has done it from memory, with a facade of colourfully zigzagging brickwork and pointy Gothic windows, topped with battlements that all recall something Venetian, if not the actual palace itself. A wing was added to the side in 1936 that fused the same elements of crazily coloured brickwork with the streamlined style of the moment, which is curiously successful. The architect was William Leeper, who produced notable arts and crafts buildings throughout the region, including a handsome church in nearby Kilmacombe, in which my parents were married. Imagine how spectacular Templeton's would have appeared in 1892, adding yet more pinnacles to a Glasgow skyline busy with domes and towers, as well as shipyard cranes. That coloured brickwork evoked the patterned chenille carpets that Templeton pioneered, and which could be found in the smartest places, from the ballrooms of transatlantic liners like Titanic to the White House, and even Canberra's original Parliament building. This is no dark satanic mill, but an architectural hymn to the glory of commerce. As always, there was a human cost, with two horrific accidents, one when 100 weavers were trapped by a collapsed wall, leaving 29 dead, in 1889, and another when a countless number of weavers was killed in a fire in 1900. The great mills of Britain are awesome things, often modelled on buildings of the venerable civilizations of the past. Here, Glasgow is presented as a new Venice, a city built on trade, just like the original. Restored and remade now into offices and apartments, Templeton's continues to give back to the city, a reminder of the sweat that made the city, and of a time when the workplace was sometimes as dazzling as the products made within.
right? We've had our cup of tea and we're filled with soup and warmed against this rather crisp day.
I've botched a favour for us, Jonathan. It's not open to the public just now because it really is a summer visit. But my friends Nikki and Robert Wilson have allowed us to come in to see Jupiter Art Park.
Excellent.
It's Switzerland. It's between Glasgow and Edinburgh, so there's no fights about that. But it really is an amazingly fabulous private enterprise. We're first greeted by this amazing landform work by the architect Charles Jenks. This Belvedere structure, three mounds that go around, are a lovely sort of welcoming and highlight, you know, behind the Jacobean architecture made of brickwork. It's a fantastically impressive entry into the park. Now, this is going to take a little while because we're going to walk around, so we'll get nice and sort of fit and hot. And I'll just show you some of the highlights of the collection quite quickly. This fantastic dazzlement that has been created by Jim Lambie, these mirrored panels that then have these extravagant colour folds that pick up both the landscape and then bounce it back again, is, I think, a fantastic camouflage for what is essentially a working shed. And this is a great invention.
It's like a shed surrounded by a little sea of butterflies.
It's so lovely, and you can see yourself in it, but it's a great kind of mirage, if you like, and a very, very good start to our journey. It's serious stuff, but it's also very delectable, sensuous, and playful. People enjoy the park a great deal, and when you're out here in the summer, people are dancing around and reflecting themselves in that, and it's just terrific. This lovely decorative pool, somewhat perhaps, you know, in conversation with Miro's surrealism, etc., but a lovely opportunity for the hot people of Edinburgh, Glasgow to come and wade in the summer months.
That slightly formal garden that surrounds it, that parterre that's in the...
Yeah.
The background surrounding that pool.
It kind of mucks with the the symmetry a bit and adds another sort of playful element. But also it's kind because, you know, you're out there and it's hot and you want the kids to have a little bit of a splash and a puddle.
We can splash in there.
I don't think we would. It's a little chilly today. Okay. But you know, if we came back in summer, for sure we could.
Professor Robert Crawford.
In the late 19th century, the architect Charles Rennie Mackintosh, who had studied at the Glasgow School of Art, was hired to design a new Glasgow School of Art. It's perhaps the world's most famously appropriate educational building. It's an Art Nouveau masterpiece. Mackintosh designed everything in it, from the clocks and small pieces of furniture and door handles to the overall architecture of the whole building, which stands on a street just above Sauchie Hall Street, or perhaps, I should say, stood there. Because tragically, this building, which is by far Glasgow's most famous building, burned down in 2014, and then the city determined to rebuild it, and in the middle of the rebuild, it burned down again in 2018. So it's almost, if you like, a Glaswegian version of the Notre Dame story. Mackintosh is most famous for as an architect and designer. If you want to think of something Mackintosh designed, think of an ordinary kitchen chair, paint it black, and then extend the back of that chair up and up and up until it's about 5.5 feet tall. These famous high-back chairs that Mackintosh designed, you'll find now in Paris, you'll find them in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, but you'll find them most of all in Glasgow's museums and art galleries. He had a wonderful, weird and unique sense of style. The Viennese picked up on this in his own lifetime, but no one else picked up on it so well as the Glaswegians. And most of Mackintosh's most famous buildings are either in or close to Glasgow.
On Radio National, you're listening to Lost and Found, this week a journey to Glasgow. I'm Jonathan Green. Colin Bissett.
When Glasgow was nominated the European City of Culture in 1990, few were as astonished as those who lived in the city itself. Culture? Here? It was a turning point in the city's history, and much of that was down to the opening of the Burrell Collection a year earlier. The collection of artworks and artefacts that spans five centuries was amassed by a Scottish shipping magnate, Sir William Burrell, who gifted it to the city in 1944. Finding a home for it took time, until a competition for a new building was won in 1972 by a team of young Cambridge architects, including Australia's own Britt Anderson, with its leader, Barry Gasson, completing it in the 1980s. Set in leafy Pollock Park on the outskirts of the city, the building uses the landscape to highlight the diversity of the collection, where the view into light-dappled woodland seems to accentuate the beauty of, say, a late medieval Madonna and Child, or a sculpture from ancient Greece. Some of its treasured architectural works were also incorporated into the structure, such as the great stone archway at its entrance, to create a dignified and sophisticated building, which blends a lightweight framework and large areas of glass with the solidity of the local Lanarkshire stone, which has a lovely blush to it. Its low-spreading architecture seemed to harmonise perfectly with the collection, in the way a good musical score adds to the power of a film. And yet, we've moved on to a different era, where the museum building must compete with the treasures for our attention. The understated Burrell Collection is closed currently for refurbishment that will open it up, making it more accessible and customer-friendly. Many fear it will lose the unique, almost sacred atmosphere it used to instill. It'll remain, though, a building that directed the world's somewhat surprised eyes towards Glasgow, and which showed how the Scottish vernacular could adapt to modern times, creating an architecture that was innately civil and dignified, words that few applied to the Glasgow of the past.
Professor Robert Crawford.
One of the most famous writers to study at the Glasgow School of Art was Alistair Gray, who died at the end of 2019. In 1981, Gray published a massive novel called Lanark, subtitled A Life in Four Books. It's illustrated by Gray, who, as you would expect of someone who trained at the Glasgow School of Art, was a fine painter and illustrator. But it's a very strange work. It is a life in four books, but it has two heroes, and it starts with book three. And half of Lanark, roughly speaking, is set in Glasgow and is a kind of autobiographical novel about a young man growing up in Glasgow who becomes an artist and paints murals. And the other half is set in a science fiction world, in an imagined institute in which the other hero becomes trapped. And Glasgow, in some ways, is a version of this institute. And this institute, which is called Unthank, is in some ways a kind of thankless version of Glasgow. It's a complicated book. It's an epic story. And it does portray Glasgow as a complex, tough, intellectually ambitious place. Gray was to the fore in left-wing Scottish thought, and to the fore in the contemporary push for Scottish independence. But he's best known as an artist, many of whose works depicted Glasgow. He became a kind of official recorder to Glasgow at one point, and as a novelist, many of whose novels are set in Glasgow, and whose Lanark, particularly published in 1981, kind of kick-started a new wave of Scottish fiction that includes writers such as James Kelman, A.L. Kennedy and Janice Galloway.
I have so enjoyed our Jupiter Sculpture Park, but I wonder if we ought not, perhaps. Is it time to eat?
Oh, we definitely need to eat, Jonathan. Yes. We're always eating.
You want to take me somewhere called Crab Shack?
Yes.
I'm apprehensive.
Crab Shack is one of those little nooks down on Argyle Street, famous for its fish cakes. Oh, my goodness me, they are just brilliant, but also the Loch Fine oysters, and I don't think you'll find a finer oyster, really, although some people would debate with me. Crab Shack is a really terrific little find, quite the sort of hive of activity. It's really tiny, so it's hard to get in, so it's good to go early. And then I think after that we should, just because it's so splendid, we should stop in and have a martini at a Regano. Regano is the place in Glasgow for a bit of deco decadence. Famously, the interiors are very boaty. It was made by the same people who fitted out the Cunard Line's ships. And so you do really feel as though you're going into the captain's quarters. And it's a fabulous place to wind up a lovely day in Glasgow.
Having a drink in the wreck of the Titanic.
Well, exactly. But it's splendid. You know, the woodwork is superb. The frosted glass is brilliant. The waiters are impeccable. And they make a darn good vodka martini with a twist straight up.
That Regano martini has set me on my ear, Juliana. We must depart from Glasgow.
Let's wobble off, shall we? Puff the wee windies.
Professor Robert Crawford.
The artist Katie Patterson was born in Glasgow in 1981, the year that Alistair Gray's Lannet was published. She grew up there, though she lives on the east coast of Scotland now. But if I had to pick a contemporary Glaswegian who spoke to global conditions now, it would probably be Katie Patterson, who's best known as an artist responsible for the Future Library Project. If you don't know this, Google it. The project itself is based in Norway, and it involves commissioning 100 works from writers, one per year, which are being stored in a library in Norway and growing a forest just outside Oslo. In 100 years from the project's inception, and the project began in 2014, the year the art school first burned down in Glasgow, the trees of this forest will be felled and pulped, and paper will be produced, and these texts will then be published in 2114 for the first time. This is an artwork about sustainability, about trust, and it's an artwork, if you like, conducted in the face of climate change. Margaret Atwood, who was the first of these writers commissioned to produce a work for it, very enthusiastic about it. Atwood, of course, came herself from a background of environmentalists. And so this future library work by Katie Patterson is kind of appropriate, particularly because Glasgow, her birthplace, will in 2020 be the venue for the UN COP 2020 conference on climate change. So just as with Adam Smith and Charles Ray McIntosh and Alistair Gray, so I think with Katie Patterson, Glasgow has produced someone with a strikingly international vision and one that's very much at the heart of our own time.
You've been listening to Lost and Found, this week a journey to Glasgow. You heard from Professor Robert Crawford, School of English and Andrews University, Juliana Engberg, curator, author of En Route, Colin Bissett, design writer and friend of the program. Producers are Mira Adler-Gillies and Lisa DeVissi. Technical production by Ari Gross. I'm Jonathan Green.